Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens and parents and families and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. Prevention Meets Fashion is a 501c3 nonprofit that specializes using fashion-based approach to educate the sexual and reproductive health needs of queer and BIPOC communities, that's Black, Indigenous, people of color. It also fosters a safe, self-affirming space for all gender identities. Hakia Outland, founder of Prevention Meets Fashion, Inc., joins us this hour to discuss the variety of programs and services provided. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Listening audience, you are in for a real treat. This rare, unique program utilizes a different twist and perspective through fashion, advocacy, community, and education. Via the Zoom platform, founder and president Hakia Outland, a queer Black woman and mother of three amazing children, joins this edition. She's also a social worker and adjunct professor. Hakia, welcome to 411 Team. I am so glad to have you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for inviting me to 411 to discuss Prevention Meets Fashion, why it was founded in the first place, and our future, which we're very excited about.
Well, I can understand the excitement. I'm excited just to talk to you about it. Share with us how this program evolved.
Yeah, so Prevention Meets Fashion was initially an initiative that we started about 5 to 6 years ago. And it started out just us wanting a way to engage youth around sexual health. Prevention Meets Fashion is based here in Philadelphia. And in Philadelphia, 5 or 6 years ago, and even today, the age groups of 13 to 24 continue to be on the rise with sexually transmitted infections, including HIV. And being in the HIV field myself as a social worker for over 20 years, I just wanted a different way to engage youth, especially LGBTQ Black youth. So we started thinking about what creative ways we could engage youth that were out of the norm that we normally engage our youth, which is like ballroom or some type of community event. And so I was talking to a condom company one day, and they were like, oh, we have this program called Project Condom. And I was like, cool, that sounds really cool. Like, what is that? And they were like, oh, well, we donate condoms to organizations who want to do more condom education in their community. And I just felt like it aligned really well. So as we started talking, you know, they were like, hey, some of the colleges in other states actually did condom fashion shows. And I was like, oh my God, like that's what I've been looking for, like something creative. So I didn't think in Philly we would have the buy-in around it, but our first year we had over six youth actually design clothing out of condoms. We put on this big fashion show. They invited friends, family. Prevention Meets Fashion invited folks. And yeah, that's how Prevention Meets Fashion got started. And year after year, we started doing it. And each year we tried to up our creativity. So each year we started adding themes. Mm-hmm. And last year, our theme was wearing social justice, just to have a really real conversation about how sexually transmitted infections and in general, just prevention messages around Black and brown bodies and how they intersected with social justice issues. And so we had folks design clothing with social justice themes, and we talked about where those clothing items originated from, what they meant to Black and brown people. And and also with around the guise of sexual health.
Let me interrupt you there. Give me an example. I mean, what does a piece of clothing with the social justice theme look like? I mean, elaborate on that. Tell us what that is. Even though we can't see it. I mean, what would that involve? What would it look like?
Yeah, so we talked about how certain articles of clothing are very popular in our culture, and how although Black and brown bodies popularize certain items like bamboo earrings, long nails, t-shirts, hoodies, we aren't always afforded those spaces to wear those clothes and feel safe. So we talked about that in a social justice type of way, because during that time, the pandemic was going on, the civil unrest was going on, and we really talked about how during the pandemic, we were asked to put on these masks, right? But yet, some stores still had signs up that say no hoodies, no masks, no covering your face. And all of a sudden, Black people were, you know, thrust with, you have to wear these masks. But we were already fighting back that we couldn't go in certain spaces covering our faces because we didn't know if it was going to cause us harm. So we talked about all of that. So you saw people in the fashion show actually make masks out of condoms. And we talked about that. Like, what does that look like for Black and brown bodies, right? These designers use us in their fashion shows. They use us in their marketing. Yet some of us can't wear these items that we are purchasing for ourselves and our children in certain neighborhoods safely, in certain markets and stores safely. We're followed around stores, or we're asked to take certain things off. We're more conscious of what we wear because of our bodies. And so we talked about all of that, again, under the guise of also sexual health, right? And health in general, because we were talking about the pandemic, and, you know, a lot of sexual health messages came out during the pandemic. A lot of organizations shut down. People weren't able to get STI testing. They weren't able to adapt to the community. And once again, Black and brown bodies bore the burden of all of that.
Okay. So what I hear is basically you, well, first of all, excuse me, there are issues surrounding clothing that you address, basically. It's what I'm hearing you saying, even in your therapy. Is that a good way of saying it?
Yes. So it's not only just therapy, because everybody here doesn't do therapy. Mm-hmm. We do psychoeducation and stuff. But yes, some of the issues that were brought up were racism, right? Sexual health issues, social justice issues, all of these things that I don't think people think about when we think about clothing and or sexual health as well.
That's a real good point, that people don't think about these issues. When they just don't. The clothing component and the role that clothing plays is not considered. And I think it's, you just don't think about it. It's not there. So you make fashion your modus operandi in approaching these different social injustices. Is that a correct way to say things?
Yes, yes,
okay.
It is.
Okay, all right. So fashion actually plays a real role in what you are doing. I think it sends a message, very clear message. I would like us to talk about that message. One thing I note, I wanted to ask you, I know online, and I didn't know if this was you or not, when one looks up Prevention Meets Fashion on the internet, a shop comes up. Now, is that your shop? Is that associated with you, a clothing shop?
I'm not sure what comes up online.
Okay.
It might say shop and say coming soon, because we do have a shop underneath us, but we are not a clothing brand.
No.
And I wasn't aware of that.
Okay. Well, you might want to check it out, because I, you know, when I was doing the research for the program, I, you know, wrote in Prevention Meets Justice. And what came up was a shop clothing, and then they had different models wearing different, you know, just different clothing. And I didn't know. I wanted to ask you if that was associated with your organization.
So were you looking at prevention meets fashion or prevention meets justice?
Prevention meets fashion.
Oh, that's interesting.
Prevention meets fashion. Definitely.
Oh, well, that's interesting because, I mean, if you did see folks with clothing on, it might have been from our fashion show or something like that. But we are the only prevention meets fashion. There are variations of it that people use in other organizations for their own organization. I know I'm aware of like fashion meets philanthropy or something like that. Mm-hmm. But as far as prevention meets fashion, we are the only one. So if you do see anything involving clothing, it's our models that have that are wearing condoms. But we don't have regular apparel other than our t-shirts and our sweatshirts that you will see.
Okay. Would you share with the listening audience, talk about the message that one's clothing sends, whatever it is you may be wearing?
So clothing to that question is a little hard to answer because clothing is personal to everyone.
Yeah. And cultural too.
Yes. And
I know that my next question was going to be, and how does culture intersect this whole arc? You know, so just throw both of them in there and address it.
Okay. So clothing is personal to folks. It's also intersectional. So I'm very careful about saying what clothing means to people. I don't want to put a meaning to clothing for people that may not be a correct meaning. I will say ballpark, just from the work that we're doing, that clothing is safety. Clothing is harmful. Clothing is trauma, which Prevention Fashion also does the one and only clothing and trauma support group, where we dive into the issues of how clothing has intersected with our trauma backgrounds and history. I will say that clothing is gender affirming care. You know, with all the anti-trans bills going on around medical and supportive services for trans folks.
Can I ask you to hold your thoughts? Yes. This is one of those times. Okay.
Yes.
I'm talking with Hakia Outland, founder of a truly unique program utilizing fashion. We're going to take a brief break. Just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and from Philadelphia, PA, I welcome the return of guest Hakia Outland, founder of a special nonprofit, Prevention Meets Fashion. Before we took a break, I had asked you about, you know, the meaning of clothing and what message it sent. And even though I am very much aware that it does depend on one's individual culture and where you sit, but I think about like the guys that wear the low slung pants. It sends a message to most everybody, I mean, and there are exceptions. And that message may be an incorrect message, but it sends a message. That was kind of what I was thinking of, just, you know, what one wears says something about the person. Maybe, okay, and I say maybe, and I understand your reluctance, you know, as how you responded, but I do want to say that because I do think that clothing does, even it may be interpreted, it may be misinterpreted, that it does send, say something about the individual. Would you agree with that?
Yes and no. I'm really careful about naming what clothing means to someone. And as you said before the break, I was explaining how clothing is gender-affirming care to trans folks and how clothing protects them and it affirms them. Clothing is also suicide prevention. Clothing is also a basic need. But as you were alluding to, for some people, clothing is a is hard. It's hard, right? Because you want to wear these trends. And again, as I said before the break, you know, when Black and brown folks wear their pants sagging or bagging, we're criminalized.
Right.
There are some states that if you wear your pants and your underwear are exposed, you are incarcerated. You're locked up. Whereas you have a runway and you have a white model do the same thing. And it is, oh, this is the newest trend.
Right.
So we have to look at this, as I said before, from multiple lens, right? And that would be, you know, racism, that would be social justice, right? Mm-hmm. And so the issue that we try to raise here is the education around that, right? Who is afforded the right to their bodies? Who is afforded the right to their autonomy around clothing, right? Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, Black and brown bodies and queer bodies are told what we can and cannot wear. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Right?
Yes.
Versus why we're wearing it, right? No one ever asks why we're wearing this, right? It's always someone's prescribing a meaning to our clothing based off of their narrow understanding of us as a people, of us as a culture, of us as identities and orientations, and as us of intersectional people. And so I think other people assign these negative notions of clothing, right? We even see it with the bonnets, right?
Yeah.
Even with hairstyles, right? We have the Crown Act now because now Black women are like, I deserve to wear my hair in its natural state and I deserve for it not to be looked at as unprofessional, right?
Exactly.
Whereas
exactly.
again, someone that doesn't look like us can put braids in their hair and it'd be the next big thing, right? So that's what we talk about here. And I know a lot of people listening are going to say, but I'm not hearing what that has to do with sexual health, right? It has everything to do with sexual health because how you feel about yourself, how you feel about your body, indirectly relates to how you feel about your body as a sexual being. It indirectly affects what you will and will not do with your body to obtain some clothing. There are absolutely some folks that go into sex work or trade sex for clothing, right? Because they put this meaning of these clothing items that, hey, I don't want to look poor. And so therefore I know that I can't afford this. So how can I get these X, Y, Z things, right? We're also now with our newest program, our gender-based violence program, we're going around talking to youth about healthy and unhealthy relationships. And also we are, I would like to say that we are bringing the nuances around clothing and violence, right? How much of gender-based violence with our youth is wrapped up around clothing, right? Is someone telling them what they can and cannot wear outside of their family? Are their partners telling them what they can and cannot wear? We know that there is an issue with fashion or clothing around intimate partner violence and domestic violence, right? But do we ever look into how that intersects with youth? And so that's what we've been going around talking about now, and talking about how all of that plays into the violence of youth, the violence perpetuated by youth, and how that also can lead to sexual health issues such as HIV. I believe it's 1 in 5 women who will experience intimate partner violence and be exposed to HIV. So it is very interconnected. And that's what we talk about here with Prevention Meets Fashion. Fashion is our way of engaging folks and intervening with folks. But once they come into our organization, we do so much more than fashion. Yes, we take care of that basic need. If they need clothing, we will take care of that. We have a clothing closet that, you know, we're so blessed to have community members that donate every month to our clothing closet to be able to help folks experiencing clothing poverty. But we do so much more under the umbrella of Prevention Meets Fashion.
How is your program funded?
So we are funded in many different ways. We recently just started getting grants. Again, it's been really hard as a Black queer-led organization with this niche, right? It's a new niche. Mm-hmm. We understand that people may not understand and get it. So we really just started getting grants. But again, we are so blessed that the community has stepped up and supported us. Since we've been in existence for 5 years, a nonprofit for a little over 2 years, we have solely been running on donations, in-kind donations, community donations, individual donations, whether it's money, time, support. And recently we just started getting grants and getting recognized for the work that we're doing and the nuances that we're doing with populations that previously people said they couldn't reach.
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly applaud you, you know, and I have to put a shout out there to Corey Silverberg, because he's the one who connected us. So I'm very, very glad to have the opportunity to talk with you. All of your programs follow a four core service area. What is it called? FACE, which is what? Fashion, advocacy, community, and education. Would you share with us just how that intersects, what that means?
Yes. So we created a model or framework called FACE, which is Fashion, Advocacy, and Community and Education. And what that does is it gives us a framework to work around when we're working with folks. Again, people don't all the time understand how fashion and sexual health work together. So with the fashion, we obviously talk to people and work with people and take care of their clothing needs through that fashion component. If they want to, then we try to move them into the A, so which is advocacy, right? So mm-hmm. Now that, you know, we've taken care of your needs, we're stabilized, we try to get them to advocate in some way so that we're paying it forward. And then we have C, community, right? We're a community here. Whether folks come to us for one article of clothing, come to us for condoms, come to us for our support groups, we're a community. We don't just shut people out. Like, people can come back to us as many times. And a good example of that is our internship program. We created an internship program specifically for queer and gender expansive folks, because again, during a pandemic, a lot of them lost their jobs. A lot of queer and gender expansive people are in service jobs. So we wanted to give back. So we started hiring folks on a part-time basis to come into our community, gain some skills and learn how to build their resume, and then hopefully get them full-time jobs somewhere. So we are a community. And then obviously education is our biggest component. Again, we started on the education around HIV and AIDS, and that grew into the bigger umbrella of sexual health, which mission wasn't always our mission. Mm-hmm. We changed the mission once we became a nonprofit to expand on where we were going in the future. And that's why we use sexual health or sexual wellness. You know, language is constantly evolving. But for right now, our mission stands at sexual health, which is an umbrella term, not just for talking about sex, but for talking about the mind, the body, the spirit, and how this all intersects with what we're doing here at Prevention Meets Fashion.
Well, I know in talking with you initially, you commented that fashion helped you when coming out, that it was instrumental in coping. Would you expound on that and share that with the listening audience so they have an idea of just what you mean?
Yes. Yeah, so I always say that I've always been coming out over the years through my fashion. My fashion has evolved. But again, as a Black identified individual, before I even get into my gender identity or my sexual orientation, it is the fact that, again, growing up as a young Black girl, what I wanted to wear was policed a lot, right? My family, mainly my grandmother, was concerned that People would perceive me a different way, that they wouldn't look at how smart I was. They would look at the fact that, you know, my clothes was too tight, or I had on red lipstick or fishnet stockings, or that I wore baggy sweatpants and Tims. And so I grew up perpetuating these clothing politics, right? So I thought that I always had to be put together and have a suit on to be taken seriously. Mm-hmm. And over time, it just started breaking me down. That wasn't me. That wasn't what I wanted the world to see me as. And once I got comfortable with that and started finding my own style, I got comfortable enough to go to my Christian grandmother and be like, hey, I'm queer, you know? And, you know, we know that queer back in the day is a derogatory term. Yeah. And some people still use it as a derogatory term. But I'm so blessed that my grandmother was open enough to sit down with me and hear that and hear what I meant by that, you know? And it wasn't that I just was sexually attracted to other genders. It was emotionally, physically. And so once all those parts started to coming together, I felt like I was becoming my authentic self. And, you know, I talk a lot about my grandmother, but my mother was also instrumental in that, as well as my brother and my children, and their fathers. You know, it was really, instrumental that I had these folks around me that supported me. And I recognized that privilege, because not every Black queer person has that. And I had that. I had the privilege to not, you know, come out to everyone. I just came out to who I wanted to come out to. And that was safety for me. And now, you know, to be able to do this for my community is amazing. To be able to talk to other young Black queer folks, other Black little girls and boys and, you know, men and women, to say, how can I get you to be in your authentic self? And I'm really real about that, because I tell people, when you get on this journey, you're going to lose people. You're going to grieve. You're going to be sad. You're going to feel isolated. And that is part of our journey to really finding ourselves and being our true selves.
When you ask them that question, how can you get them to that point? What are the type of responses that you receive?
There are many different responses that we receive. Mm-hmm. And we actually have a support group called Central Connections, where we talk about and go through the steps of finding your authentic self. So some of the responses we've had is, you know, I'm a former sex worker. I go to church every week. You know, I feel good about myself when I'm leaving my home to go to church, but sitting on that front row, I start feeling anxious if my skirt rises up, because people may know that I'm a former sex worker, right? Mm-hmm. So we talk through that with folks, right? And name that. Like, what is that feeling, right? How can we work through that, right? Mm-hmm. We had someone who came to our support group who was a non-binary Jewish person. And through our help and our support, they actually connected with their Jewish grandfather, told them about the Holocaust and how gay people had to wear certain symbols on their clothes. So all of that, he didn't realize. They were non-binary. They used they and them pronouns. They didn't realize how when they got older, that affected what they wore to the office and what they wore in their everyday life. And they talked a little bit about how they still keep their traditional, you can't really see me, my air quotes, traditional male clothes, so that they didn't have to explain to people that they were non-binary and that they expressed their gender through various forms of fashion, whether it be masculine or feminine fashion.
Your staff, I know some were unable to participate, but would you share with us the staff that your organization has and what different avenues they walk?
Yeah, so here at Prevention Meets Fashion, our community, our staff mirrors our community. Mm-hmm. meaning that over 77% of our staff is Black, African American identified. Of that, over half identify as LGBTQ, and various other intersections. Right now, we have all Black interns. None of them actually identify as LGBTQ right now, but they came to Prevention Meets Fashion to learn how to support the queer community. So we have an intern right now who's a Black woman, Muslim, and they came to PMF to intern because they want to know how to support their nieces who are lesbian and also intersex with their Muslim identity. We have another intern who's Black, and she came to PMF because she's from the South. And in the South, it's much harder for Black queer people. And she knows that, you know, in her journey of social work and being a sex educator, that she's going to have to interact with folks that come into PMF. So we get a host of people who come to PMF, and mainly queer people. We are really carving the space for young queer professionals to be themselves. We don't really have a dress code here. So, you know, folks feel comfortable to wear whatever clothing they want. It doesn't even have to match their gender identity. That is not what we're concerned about here. They know that they're going to be, their identity is going to be affirmed and uplifted here.
And that seems to be a real core component of your program, that kind of self-affirming space that one feels like, hey, okay, good about themselves. I'm going to hold my thoughts and yours. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
Just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. We are talking with Prevention Meets Fashion, our founder and president, Hakia Outlin. Hakia, let me ask you, would you talk about or address the trauma that may be associated? I know you do a trauma and fashion group, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah. Would you share with us just some of the key components that are involved in that?
Yeah, so our trauma and fashion group, we try to get people to think about and bring to the surface some of the issues that they may have had growing up around clothing and issues that have grown into their adulthood now. So a lot of people mainly, like I said before the break, mainly talk about their issues with clothing in the church, clothing wrapped around their gender identity or sexual orientation, dress codes. We do a lot around dress codes with in the schools, in the workplace, and how they are, you know, built on racist ideologies and all of these other things. So our support groups bring in a lot of conversations around trauma. And I'm being really careful about how I'm talking about it because, again, we did create this and is really new, and we're hoping to get funds to trademark it because no one is doing a trauma and fashion support group. So under the advisement of a council, when I speak about specifically our trauma and fashion, I'm really careful about how we talk about it until we do get something trademarked about it.
Well, I understand that. Well, let's move on and look at the STEAM fashion, STEAM. What is that?
Yeah, so STEAM is a uplifted version of STEM, which is science, technology, engineering, and math. Our STEAM fashion adds the A, which is for arts, so science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. And what we do with our STEAM fashion program is basically show people how fashion is STEAM, how like knitting can be coding, right? Mm-hmm. How sewing can be measurements, which is math, learning the materials, knowing what materials can be glued, can be sewn with thread. All of that is science, technology, engineering, and math, even in the construction and structure of garments. So we have groups. We haven't had one in a while. Within the past year, but we're hoping to get it restarted back up. Our STEAM component that is coming up, though, is we're talking about women and HIV. And so we have curated a series of Black women that work in HIV, in public health, in the science fields, again, as a way for us to show representation that Black women in particular can be in STEAM and STEM fields.
Mm-hmm. How does one connect? All of this talking, I thought, here I go. We've been talking about this program, talking about it. What about someone who's listening to this and they think, oh, that's very interesting. I would like to, further investigate it. Where do they go? Who do they contact? What is the information they need to have? Do you accept volunteers? Talk about that component of it.
Yes, we do. So majority of all the information that anyone listening will need to know is on our website, okay, which is www.preventionmeetsfashion.org. We also have an Instagram at Prevention Meets Fashion. And we also are on LinkedIn, Prevention Meets Fashion, Inc. We do not have a Facebook, and that's purposeful. Our community is mainly on LinkedIn because of schools and mm-hmm. interns. We're primarily on Instagram because we take a lot of pictures. We go to a lot of fashion shows, stuff like that. And so a majority of the information that you can find is on a website. And if you can't find anything on a website, you have numerous ways to contact us through our website. And either myself or our interns or volunteers will get in contact with you. It's also information on there about how you can sign up to be a volunteer. We're always accepting volunteers. You don't have to be in Philly. There are virtual opportunities. We are a virtual organization, so we do uplift a lot of virtual opportunities. And we welcome folks with disabilities, LGBTQ folks, folks with different languages, because occasionally we do get asked for different languages. So we have numerous ways that you can interact with us.
Okay. Talk about, we'd like to expand a little bit more. That's one of my pet areas is disability. Well, how do disabilities intersect in Prevention Meets Fashion?
Yeah, so we really take a disability justice lens here, and okay, everything that we do, we try to work from that lens that everyone has a disability, whether seen or mm-hmm, not. Mm-hmm. And so that's another important reason why we need grants, because our website, we tried our best to make it disability friendly, but we would like to make it more disability friendly. But as far as sexual health and fashion, disability intersects with both of those things. You know, fashion is just now jumping on a bandwagon of making accessible clothing, right? Yeah,
right.
For wheelchair folks, for people who walk with canes, for people who are low vision or blind. And also as far as sexual health, right? A lot of times people think that folks with disabilities, again, seen or not seen, they don't have a right to a healthy sexual life. And that's just not true. So we talk about all of that at Prevention Meets Fashion. We just started really collecting disability, numbers within our own organization. And that was intentional that we didn't collect that because we didn't want people to feel like they were a number. Mm-hmm. But now it's important for us to know how many of our folks actually do need assessive devices and stuff like that. Like, we're getting folks in that come through our clothing program that have prostheses and stuff like that. And before, we didn't never ask that you, we asked through our assessment if you have a disability, but we didn't capture that in our paperwork, in our numbers. So now we're just starting to capture all that. But as an organization from a whole, it was already built into our fabric here. Because many of us, staff-wise, have disabilities seen and unseen.
Okay. You mentioned at the very beginning that the program addresses and is open to 13 to 24-year-olds. Is that correct?
That is our gender-based violence program.
Okay.
But overall, the organization is open to any age. Our youngest participant that we had so far was 7. And our oldest has been 65.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
With these younger children, what role do the parents play? I mean, do the parents have to give you permission? I mean, it's still considered, you know, very much a taboo subject mm-hmm. matter. How do you address that with the younger children who may be going through a number of changes with their own sexuality. And, you know, that's in the forefront right now. You know, here in Florida, we're not even supposed to talk about it. Can't even think about it, but it's there. That's the problem with that whole attitude. How do you address that? What do you do?
Yeah, so at Prevention Meets Fashion, anyone that's under the age of 18 and come to any of our events or our groups or interact with us in any way, we ask that they have parental or guardian permission. We get a lot of youth that come from programs. So obviously having their program or organization permission for them to interact with us. So that's what we do. As far as our teaching goes, we do it from a developmental point of view. There are sex ed standards that we have to go by. So certain age, we go by guidelines with certain age, but we also take the parents' lead. You know, we have some parents that have called us about their 9 and 10-year-old getting messages from, you know, their friends of genitalia, right?
Mm-hmm.
So exactly. So we take the parents' lead, and we talk to the parent or the guardian about, or the organization, what do you want us to talk about? What have you seen? And that has really what has grown our healthy relationship program. During the summer, we had numerous organizations reach out to us to talk about healthy and unhealthy relationships, because what they were seeing after the pandemic was, the youth hooking up at the camps or when they were coming mm-hmm. to after school programs. So we came in to have those frank conversations. And I do want to say that when you do hire us, we do not sugarcoat anything. We are really real and upfront with youth, especially with the violence going on. And a lot of times that is perpetuated by gender roles, stereotypes, norms that can lead to violence. So we are very upfront and firm with our youth about what's going on in the world today.
Okay. Does the school play a role? Do you have any interaction with the schools? And if so, what? And if they don't have it, is there a way that they can become connected with your organization?
So we rarely partner with schools,
okay.
Just because they have their own mm-hmm. guidelines and they tend to censor what we can and cannot talk about or what
uh-huh.
we can bring into classrooms. So we tend to partner a lot with out-of-school programs because they're a little more lax and we're able to get to the issues that they really want to talk about. But we are looking into partner with schools in the near future. Again, the one school that we did partner with that has been amazing was Dobbins High School here in Philadelphia. They always welcomed us with open arms into their school. But again, they have different departments. Their principal is very progressive. So yeah.
Do you work with any individual therapists, private therapists at all?
We do. We actually will refer people that we know may need more therapy. We are looking in the future to hire a licensed social worker. I am a social worker, but I am not licensed. I am a macro social worker, although I was trained clinically. I decided that, you know, it was I'm better used being in the community. Mm-hmm. Even though I know I was a wonderful therapist and I thank my clients in the past, but in the future, I'm getting back in, maybe getting back into that because I am a sex therapist. And so I do need my license to continue with that. But we are looking in the future to hire specifically a queer therapist here at Prevention Meets Fashion.
Okay, before we close, can you just give me an overview of someone if they come, they contact you? And they're going through whatever their changes may be, changes in just adapting to the world, to their community, to their environment. What is the first step that you take? I mean, what is the process that they will go through?
So the process that they will go through, one, is they already took their first process of seeking us out, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
But once they come into us, you know, we welcome them. We don't do an assessment right away. Okay. We get to their immediate need. We want to first address their immediate needs. So if someone is coming in crisis, we want to make sure that they get into a space that they can talk to us when we do our assessment. If they're coming in for a clothing need, we want to make sure that we address that. If they're coming in for a food insecurity need, we want to make sure that we address that. If they're coming in for a housing need, okay. we want to make sure that we address that before we move into any of the heavy paperwork, because we know that people are not going to be mindful or want to answer any questions that we're asking mm-hmm. until their immediate needs are met. So that is literally our first step, just making sure that people feel safe and have their immediate needs met.
Now, there are a number of support groups that you have referred to. How does one access them? I mean, can you get them online? I mean, what is the process there?
Yeah, so the process, again, is going through our website and signing up for our open support groups. Right now all of our support groups are closed. We're doing private support groups with organizations right now, but we will be opening them up to the public virtually soon.
Okay. And I know you are in partnership and collaboration with a number of organizations. Can you kind of share what these, maybe without giving too much detail, what these partnerships and collaborations involve?
Yes, yeah, so we partner a lot with the Purple House Project here in PA, mm-hmm. okay. and they're a domestic violence organization. We partner with them to do things around clothing insecurity, to talk about the intersections of domestic violence and in LGBTQ communities, because their mission is primarily women, cisgender women. Mm-hmm. So we partner with them when they have queer folks that they come in contact with. We partner with them around our gender-based violence stuff. So we partner together to merge our services. We also partner with the only transgender shelter here in Philadelphia, which is a new organization that just started, but it's called the Arca Safety. We partner with them and go in and do workshops and support groups, or just in general, be in community with the folks in their shelter. We partner a lot with the Philadelphia Department of Health around youth and sexual health. We partner with foster care agencies or support services, folks who come in out of DHS. We also partner with a lot of queer organizations. We partner with a lot of youth organizations. We partner with a fashion organization. We just went to a fashion show that was hosted by a youth here in Philadelphia that has autism. And so we went to support him and how he looks at fashion and modeling and being autistic. Mm-hmm. So we partner with a lot of organizations around what we do. We don't have a brick and mortar, and that's intentional because we really want our staff and interns in the community. I always say also as a professor that you're not going to learn about the community from these books. You have to be in the community.
Well, we are out of time, but I tell you, I really appreciate you sharing the information about your really dynamic program. I mean, it's truly exceptional. So it's time out, and many thanks to Hakia Outland for sharing her exceptionally unique program, Prevention Meets Fashion. To my listening audience, thank you for your time and your ear. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Evan Rossi. If you would like to participate in the 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. You can listen to previous episodes of 411 Team at WFSU.org.